Tech, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, still broadcasting in full mono, AM 1570 sound, wherever the Beltway takes you and out in your cars. Set your preset, as we would say out there. Maybe I'll buy some billboards or something. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is back out on the road. We're at the Beaumont on this Thursday, getting ready for the Buffalo Bills. I might have some wings just to do it, go up to State Fair, certainly El Guapo. I got my El Guapo shirt on because I don't have a Beaumont shirt. So anybody sees Evan Brown this week or hears, tell him I need a Beaumont shirt to wear on the air. I finally just got my Restaurant Association of Maryland swag around here. We have Pit Beef Festivals happening next month on October 22nd that we are supporting. But the Maryland Crab Cake Tour is presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Raven scratch-offs to give away at the Beaumont on Thursday between 1 and 4. We will be in the 21228 where life is great in Catonsville at the corner of Beaumont and Frederick. They call it the Beaumont because it's right there on Beaumont. So very easy to find that. Window Nation, of course, always supporting us, 866-90-NATION. I have been opening very gently my Window Nation doors. They open so nice, and the outside, so the screens, everything's nice. 866-90-NATION, get yourself some new windows, do what I did. Our friends at Goodwill, talking about recycling plastics last week. We did that with Lisa Rosiniak, and my wife and I had a massive donation. We filled the car to the brim. And we dropped it all off right over on Joppa Road, right near Dr. Steve Elliott's office and Lock Raven near the Bell Lock, the old Bell Lock. Last but never least, some remnants of Restaurant Week out there for those of you celebrating, saving money, showing off all these chefs around town. Restaurant Week and the Maryland Restaurant Association put us out on the road on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We are appreciative. And we're going to be doing that with the Beaumont this week. I'll have the whole schedule for the fall up, hopefully by the end of the week. Takes two to tango. Kids are back at school. Things are messy. And the Ravens are 2-1. Luke Jones joins us now to talk all things aftermath of, you know, Luke, you and I have been on some long bus rides. Makes my back and my ass hurt thinking about some of those bus rides back through New Haven, Connecticut, and Greenwich, and New York, and getting stuck at the GW Bridge and being sideways by the time you get to exit 16W and heading back home. After, I don't know, Lee Evans drops a ball or Billy Cundiff misses a kick, or this certainly was a much nicer outcome, a little easier to go into New England these days. And for those who saw Mac Jones hobble off after that Calais Campbell collision at the end, I don't know what their future is, but defensively, you know, defending him and them, it's a little bit of a different animal than Gronkowski and Brady and Randy Moss, right?
It is. And that's why I think you look at the final outcome and you're thrilled about four takeaways and certainly takeaways on the final three drives against New England. At the same time, Mac Jones threw for over 300 yards. They gave up 7.1 yards per play. They gave up 5.1 yards per carry. It's still messy, right? I mean, we can't just look at the turnovers and say, okay, everything's fine with the defense, because it's not.
Well, the biggest thing is the ball went over their head to start the game. And I'm like, oh boy, all week long, you talk about not giving up a big play in the first play of the game, you give up a big play.
Right, right. And they didn't have Jacoby Myers out there. And it was interesting to see Devontae Parker making plays, which the Miami Dolphins waited years for that. You know, a guy who couldn't stay on the field and, you know, flashed ability. But he was certainly big on Sunday. But it's complicated right now with this defense, right? It's good. You love seeing four takeaways. And in fact, I looked this up. This was in the postgame notes, and I had to verify this because I was just that surprised. This was the first time the Ravens have forced four takeaways in a game since December of 2017. It's been nearly 5 years since the Ravens have done that, which we know in recent years they haven't forced a ton of turnovers. That's been part of the narrative, and that was part of the knock on what were some otherwise good Wink Martindale defenses until last year, where everything fell apart with all the injuries. But
you're a pro Wink guy, right? Can we just say that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You're a Wink guy. Absolutely. And I think it was very convenient, not to say that Mike McDonald won't be a good defensive coordinator, but I think it was very convenient in the minds of fans and even some media types to just put it all on Wink. Last year, the Ravens suffered a ton of injuries in the secondary, to the point where that secondary was beyond recognition compared to what it had been in training camp by the end of last year. But you make a change, and that's fine. And they're doing some things differently, you know, more too high safety, as long as you have your safeties lining up in the right spot, which was certainly a big problem against Miami, and playing a little more zone than we've seen. So there are still issues. The pass rush still not really there. You know, a couple sacks aside on Sunday. One of those by Brandon Copeland, by the way, which I thought was a good story. The Gilman kid in his first game as a Raven.
After Brandon Copeland and I exchanged several texts over the weekend. Yeah. Thank you very much. I love me some Brandon Copeland. So seeing him out there and seeing him up, and you know, I text him right away. I'm like, man, go crush him today, man. It's a good human being, Brandon Copeland.
He is. At the same time, if we're talking about Brandon Copeland, the football player, not necessarily the guy that you're going to say is the answer for their pass rush woes and their woes at outside linebacker that got even worse on Sunday with Justin Houston exiting the game with a groin issue. You know, you've got Michael Pierce, you know, and we're going to have to see about that. The way John Harbaugh talked about that post game made me, you know, it was a little unsettling the way he talked about that. Not sure if it's a biceps issue, which sometimes that's a case of, depending on how it is, can you play through it? Is it muscular? Is it the tendon? Where if it's the tendon, usually you need surgery and you're done. So we're going to have to see about that one. That was the one injury of their several injuries that they sustained on Sunday. That
this is where Dr. like, Luke Jones checks in from General Hospital.
Well,
right?
I mean, John Harbaugh said Patrick McCary's going to be fine. Now, he might miss some time with a sprained ankle, but clearly not a season ending kind of injury. He said Justin Houston, same thing with him, you know, might, you know, could miss a week or two here, but not going to be a long-term thing. But he didn't say that about Michael Pierce. So when you look at where they are on the defensive line, which you like the young talent, Travis Jones made his NFL debut on Sunday. So if they are missing Pierce for an extended period of time, he would figure into that big, but you know, they've got to clean up the run defense. That's been a little shakier than normal. We haven't focused on it a whole lot because teams have thrown the ball so much against them, but they have to clean that up. And this pass rush will continue to be a question mark until it's not. And when you're not having Justin Houston out there and you're already light, boy, they had to lean on Malik Harrison and Brandon Copeland a whole lot. And no one would have thought that a month ago or certainly 6 months ago. So, you know, and that's not even getting to the issues on the back end of the defense where, yeah, they forced turnovers, and that was big, and they were able to finish, which is something they did not do against Miami. But who's going to be the number three corner? We saw Jalen Armour Davis early in the game. Didn't go well. We saw Brandon Stevens give up some plays. You know, the good news was Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. You know, Humphrey played 100% of the snaps. I think Peters played all but a few. So that's looking good, but we know in this day and age in the NFL, you need three corners, right? You have three corners on the field most of the time. So they need to figure out who that third guy is going to be, whether it's Armour Davis, whether it's Brandon Stevens, whether it's Damarian Williams. And it could vary depending on matchups, but they're still searching. They're still figuring out their defense right now. And the good news is you can certainly live with giving up that much yardage if you're going to take the ball away four times. The bad news is I'm not sure Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and some of the other more elite quarterbacks around the league are going to be quite as cooperative as Mac Jones was, who made some great throws and then made some throws where you just say, what was that? So that's just where they are right
now. I was going to say on Mac Jones, when the ball went up in the air, it didn't look like an NFL pass to me. Now, I know the ball got there and he's incredibly accurate. It just felt like the ball was a butterfly up in the air against when I see guys sling the ball in this league. It felt more like watching when you watch Towson play and then you watch, you know, the whack, you know, like the way the ball is thrown, the way the ball comes out. But with Lamar, too, Lamar's always throwing the ball like a javelin. I mean, like it's a weird, Lamar has a weird gait, or always did before. I think he throws the ball a little differently, but the ball comes flying out. It felt like the ball fluttered Billy Kilmer style with him in some sort of weird way after watching Tom Brady, all 6'5", him put a hell of a lot more zip on the ball than maybe you think he does. But more than that, with the defense, I wanted to talk about Matabike, and I wanted to talk about Owe, right? Owe. So chasing the quarterback and who's going to do it and who's going to be the run stopper. And I mean, even Brandon Williams' name's getting brought up here over the weekend, right? And when I think of an emerging player like Brandon Williams, who was a middling draft pick, got paid in your mind too well at one point, right? And whether they're going to replace that, whether Matabike can be some sort of guy who's going to be here 3, 4, 5 years, going to get a second contract, I'm starting to look at all these guys and say, where are the guys coming on? Now, Dobbins got to get on the field to figure him out, right? You got a center, he's three games in. But you have all of these 30-something, whether it's or guys you sign, whether it's Marcus Williams, whether it's Zeitler, whether it's Moses, whether it's guys from other places. Let's just call it that. Justin Houston, guys that were not purple-hearted guys. Then there's the group of Humphrey and Andrews and Lamar and the homegrown guys who haven't won in the playoffs at really. I mean, they've won one game. That this group of whatever these young guys would be, or I call them young, but they're getting
Lamar's they're in their prime. They're in their prime. Let's say that. Right? Yeah.
I mean, I would say stalwart Ravens at this point, that group of players. But then there is the, okay, who did DaCosta draft? Where's the likely guy? And where's Bateman? And where's the next group? And with Matabike and Owe, these are a couple of guys up front that have flashed a little bit of here and there. And certainly Matabike, I think more than flashing at this point, emerging is what I call him. But when Michael Pierce, who's been here 10 years in and out, and no, we don't have him, right? Houston's not there. We have a linebacking deficiency. Patrick Queen's a first round draft pick who, you know, certainly isn't making the kind of impact CJ Mosley did, let alone Ray Lewis. I don't even talk about him. But what's emerging for you? We're getting to the quarter pole here, right? Like next week's the quarter pole of the season. The young guy, Bateman, to me, if you can get him the ball, and maybe even more hard to bring down than Hollywood Brown was. I mean, if you're swapping those guys out and getting another draft pick and not having to pay Hollywood $15 million, I'll hear all of that, right? I saw him running around trying to catch the ball with the Cardinals over the weekend. But these young guys and saying, is Linderbaum a all-pro center 2 years from now, and you see it and you feel it and you feel that connection with Lamar? Hell, I don't even have a connection with Lamar because I'm not sure he's going to be here next year, right? Like, because he's not signed, right? And everybody else talks about it, so why shouldn't we? So I'm trying to figure out who's going to be sticking around. Who's getting that Brandon Williams deal? Who's getting that Ladarius Webb deal? Where are the stars? Where's the next Mark Andrews in this pack?
Yeah, it's a fair question. And for me, it's not even talking about the big contract potentially. It's what are you doing in the meantime? Because Lamar Jackson is going to be here next year, barring a trade, because they're going to use the franchise tag on him and they're going to use the exclusive franchise tag on him. But that means he's going to be taking up a larger portion of the salary cap, which means you need more of your young players to emerge and be young stars on rookie deals. You know, Mark Andrews gave them amazing value his first 3 years before they paid him then, which they should have, right? It was smart. So you are looking at that, and you look at, you know, let's go down the list. 2019, Marquise Brown's gone. You know, that 2019 draft class, it's mostly gone. It's out of here for the most part. Ben Power is one of the few guys left from that group. So you go to 2020, as you mentioned, Patrick Queen. I had a chance at a pick six at the goal line on Sunday, which, boy, if the Ravens lose that game, we're talking about that all week long. I mean, hit him right in the six. I mean, it just did. And he's thinking about it.
Hold your thought on these players, but I just want to, I'm wearing green and El Guapo. We're going to be over at the Beaumont this week. Can I be an old guy, get off my lawn? Can I just have one moment?
Complain about the jersey numbers, aren't you?
Probably repeatedly for the rest of my life. Cause I think it was just a ridiculous shift. My wife and I were talking about this Sunday night, just watching how many of these secondary guys run around with 1 and 3 and 6 and 7 and wondering like why it's necessary to sell a San Francisco 49ers jersey that they needed to do that. I don't know. Just for me, I'm just saying, and it's not even ego or the new kids or any of that. It's more for identification. For me, it was a much more pragmatic, old school way to identify players and what positions they play. And I don't like it, but go ahead. Patrick Queen, as you were saying, who's not emerging as I see it, certainly not a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, he splashes, he flashes, he's had good games. I thought he played well against the Jets, not so well against Miami, for example. So, yeah.
A lot of guys go play well against the Jets.
But you look at Patrick Queen, I mean, you mentioned Matabike flashes, still not enough consistency for me. Now, know, maybe we're seeing a little bit more of that early on here, and they're going to need that, especially if Michael Pierce is going to be out for an extended period of time. Not that they're the same player. You know, Matabike is more of a three technique. Pierce is your shade nose, you know, stopping the run. Matabike a little more, a little more on the pass rushing side, I would say. But, you know, again, the jury's still out on him. 2001, you know, first round pick, Rashad Bateman, even though New England did a nice job of, you know, kind of keeping him out of the mix until the long catch and run. You know, certainly we can debate whether that was actually a fumble or an incomplete pass. I know John Harbaugh felt strongly that it was incomplete, but it was ruled a fumble, so it's a fumble. But, you know, certainly has shown yak ability. I think that's been really great to see. I think he's showing more speed than even proponents of him anticipated seeing from him. So that's been good to see. But you go down the list, and I'd be remiss if I didn't, as I'm mentioning Rashad Bateman, and I mentioned that 2020 draft class, let's give some love to Devin Duvernay, who had a nice long punt return, great, terrific touchdown catch. I believe has caught every target that he, you know, that every time he's been targeted, he's made the catch so far.
He's almost
this year.
An impact player now. Right?
I mean, he's doing a
complimentary
nice job.
Offense in the kind of offense that they're looking like they're trending toward, where maybe Lamar will throw it 35 or 40 times a game. Maybe he will. Maybe he'll have to. Maybe they can't run the ball that well. You know, I don't know where this is going, but if that's happening, you know, I could see him catching 4 to 6 balls a week and being that number two or that, but certainly in the punt game, I mean,
they are.
They're a special teams machine, right? And if there's any tip of the cap to Bisciotti and Harbaugh 15 years into this, and I saw Harbaugh had the warm squishy. I'll ask him where my media pass is later, but he had the warm squishy on his birthday, and Akers is there. And, you know, just this, and Rosberg's back in Denver running around, you know, with the stopwatch, right? So there's this thing with him and special teams, and it shines when they find their own little Devin Hester, right? I mean, that's pretty much what this is coming. This is the direction it's going, and he's pretty good.
Well, I mean, he made the Pro Bowl as a return specialist last year, and he returned the opening kickoff in week two for a touchdown, and he had a long punt return on Sunday. So, yeah, but what's encouraging for me is I knew that about Devin Duvernay. Now you're seeing him contributing more offensively, which I would still say in an ideal world, I'd still rather him be my number three wide receiver, and I'd still like to have another number two wide receiver. I'm not going to change my mind on that, especially with seeing how well Lamar Jackson is throwing the football better than ever. But that aside, he's doing a nice job. And he, you know, at this point has kind of been their number three passing option when you consider Andrews is really number one and Bateman's number two. I know it's tight end wide receiver, but it's the Ravens offense. We know tight ends are, you know, paramount in this offense, especially Mark Andrews. So from that standpoint, it's been good to see. But, you know, the key, I think, for the Ravens, if you're looking at this thing holistically, you know, if you're looking at the 20,000 foot view, as far as whether this team is a serious Super Bowl contender or just playoff team, AFC North Division winner, it comes down to a few of these young guys, as you mentioned, really emerging and taking the next step. They need Adafe Owe. They need more from him. It's been an underwhelming start to the season for him as a pass rusher. And, you know, we've seen him lose contain on the edge a few times here over the first few weeks.
Well, you're also watching more. Judon run around, right? It took Judon a long time to figure it out. Suggs didn't come out of the, you know, I mean, Suggs became one of the best to ever do it, but that didn't begin in the beginning. It began with, I want to kill the quarterback, right? Like, literally.
Well, sure. Well, I'm not just talking about being a well-rounded player. I'm also, hey, can you be a 10 sack kind of guy? You know, and he hasn't shown the ability to do that just yet. You know, he flashed and played well early last year and then kind of faded down the stretch. So they need more from him, considering the lack of depth at outside linebacker. And we haven't even mentioned the fact that they added Jason Pierre-Paul, and we'll see him this week, and we'll see how quickly he can get into game shape. But like Justin Houston, he's 33. I don't know how much you can expect out of a guy who has had some injuries in recent years, coming off of off-season shoulder surgery. And you know, there's a lot of wear on the tires at this point in time when you're talking about 33-year-old pass rushers. So
I bet Ajabo is going to be the best at all these guys. They just need to get him on the field. I mean, that may not happen until 2024.
Right.
I mean, literally. I mean, we may be in
not 2024.
But when we're talking about him as a – I want to give him time. I'm willing to give, sure. I'd give him Patrick Queen time, right? I mean, if Patrick, give me the amount of time with Ajabo that we've had with Queen, and I think he'll be a better football player than that. I do. I mean, and I'm buying in on that based on John's brother and just, you know, not based on the Michigan team we saw over the weekend down at College Park, but I would think he's part of this. Well, he'll be a good player. And that's one of the reasons they're deficient at that position right now. It's because they believe he'll play. You know, they eventually he'll play.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you can expect from him this year. You know, I think there's a decent chance he's going to play later in the season. But what does he look like? Yeah, no OTAs, no training camp. I mean, this was a kid who considered raw coming out of college. Now, tremendous raw ability, but a guy who, you know, was not considered a refined college prospect.
Judging DuVernay and these guys like right around now,
we are
beginning of year three, like ish. You right? have that but, would be 2 years from now. Is Ajabo on the field making a difference and playing better than OA or Queen is right now? And I think I know Eric better believe that. You know, I mean, same thing with Linderbaum as far as just what he represents and that draft pick represents. He's got to represent a second contract. He's got to be that kind of guy and play like that kind of guy. And I want to feel all of that. And that's where I am with all of this. As much as we're waiting on these old guys to ever get out there or right. whether they'll ever, Ronnie Stanley will be Ronnie Stanley or Houston will be Houston. Or, I mean, seeing Calais Campbell on the ground Sunday in this crazy injury thing. And now Pierce, who's a veteran guy, right? I mean, Bynes is the one stepping up and doing post game interviews, right? So where's this next group? Ajabo may be one of them, but he isn't right now. I guess that was my point.
Sure, sure. And but I would also say it's got to be quicker than year three for some of these guys, you know, but because if you're talking about wanting to give guys a second contract, if they're not emerging till year three or year four, how real is it, right? I mean, we all remember Paul Kruger, right? I mean, Paul Kruger's a great example.
At the same time. Look,
Paul Kruger, good for him. He got a great contract in Cleveland, and he actually probably wasn't as bad as some other Ravens defensive players who got paid elsewhere.
Well, look, I saw Sewell last week, right? Lawrence Guy's running around. You know, they've popped a Pierce one elsewhere, right? They've popped some guys into some, much like the offensive line where all their guys were running off and getting big contracts in other places, right?
Yeah, no question about it. And we haven't mentioned his name, but I have to give him his props because of how difficult week two was for him. The Kyle Hamilton forced fumble, massive play. That's the kind of play you've been waiting to see from a guy who was a 14th overall pick, a guy that the Ravens, you know, and they say this, and you never really know, you know, they're still going off of what they said compared to what reality is, but a lot of people felt Kyle Hamilton was one of the four or five best players in the draft. Now, he slid to the middle of the first round where the Ravens picked him 14th, but that was the kind of play I've been waiting to see. Rookies are going to make mistakes. To your point, Terrell Suggs made rookie mistakes. Ed Reed made rookie mistakes. We can all famously remember Ed Reed putting the ball out on the punt block and getting stripped right before the goal line. You know, that happens. Even Hall of Fame players make rookie mistakes. But for me, it was needing to see Hamilton flash first round talent where he made a huge play there. I mean, that was a case where it was still a one-score game at that point. New England, long pass play to get into Baltimore territory there, and he strips the ball away and Marcus Peters recovers. I mean, that was a massive play. So that was great to see, and that's what you want to see. And you mentioned Linderbaum. For me, you look at where the Ravens drafted, where they drafted from a position standpoint in the first round, safety and center this year. Those are not your typical first-round positions that you're targeting. So with that in mind, they need to be really good. Now, if Kyle Hamilton's just an average safety, that's not a good pick. Now, whereas if you
talk floating around last week with the name ELAM on the back of his jersey, and I'm like, ooh.
Right. But,
yeah.
But the point is, from a positional value standpoint, they need better than him just, you know, whereas if you talk about a wide receiver or a pass rusher in the first round, if they're just, you know, solid to good, then, you know, that position carries enough value where that's okay. Like Marquise Brown.
Yeah, Hollywood Brown wasn't a bad pick, right?
He wasn't a home run of a pick, but he wasn't a bust or he wasn't a bad pick, right?
But I mean, Hayden Hurst and these guys, I mean, you're picking these guys at 28. I mean, this is the demon of them being really good. When they're really good, they pick 28th, not 14th, and certainly not 6th. Right.
But in the case of Hamilton, when 14th overall pick as a center, you need to be a really good center or safety, excuse me. Center, Tyler Linderbaum being picked 25th overall. Boy, you're really talking about going against the grain there in terms of drafting a center in the first round, not just across the league, but the Ravens. We talked about how the Ravens hadn't valued the center position monetarily or with draft capital in a very long time. So Tyler Linderbaum, you draft him in the first round. That tells me you think he's going to be an all-pro, Pro Bowl kind of a center. And guess what? If he's not, and if he's only, you know, kind of slightly better than Bradley Bozeman over these next 4 years, and I don't mean Bozeman right now, I just mean what Bozeman was for the Ravens, then that ends up not being a very good pick because, again, you're not getting the same kind of positional value upside at the center position. But if he is a Pro Bowl talent, if he is an all-pro kind of center, then great. Then you love that, right? I mean, if you knew Justin Tucker was going to be what Justin Tucker is, you would have taken an early round. You would have spent an early round pick on him because he's that valuable as a kicker. But generally, you're not going to do that with kickers. So there are always exceptions to the rule. But with these guys, you know, some of these guys we're talking about, these first round picks, these early round picks over these last couple of years, for the Ravens to take that next step in terms of truly becoming that championship kind of team, they are going to need some of these young guys to emerge. And yeah, the jury's still out on some of these guys, and that's fine. But a couple of them, mainly talking about Olway, you mentioned Matt Abike, you know, especially with where they are with their front seven and their pass rush, those guys have to step up. And specifically Olway, who's been a quiet start to the season for the 2021 first round pick.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke and Luke at WNST.net. We are a completely, going through all the games through the week. We'll be together doing some Oriole baseball here during the week, getting you ready for the Buffalo Bills. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is at the Beaumont on Thursday from 1 to 4, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Goodwill, Window Nation, and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. We got Wise Conversations all week long around here. Make sure you're checking us out on the AM dial and full mono sound at AM 1570 and, of course, at BaltimorePositive.com.